Dallas, America, and live from the G&B Show Studio. This is your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle of Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, Demon Hunter.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You're so clear.
Huh? Like the same room.
It is. We are in the same room. It's amazing. Anyway, guys, welcome back, Shadow Nation. This is your Bad Boys of Shadow, the G&D show. We're finishing up. 2014 is petering down.
It is, dude. It's almost over.
It is, absolutely. Special thanks, guys, to all our sponsors, all our home, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey, are you listening? They want to know. Check them out at actionaudioapps.net. Huh? Do you like that?
That's awesome.
That was very, very awesome. Guys, we got a special show for you tonight. It's only an hour long. Nathan and I, we've been working on something special for you. What do you think, Nate? You think we are something special?
My mom says I'm special.
My mom said that too. I wonder if she was lying. No, I don't think she was.
She told me I was destined for great things.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Bye.
Look what happened. Anyway, guys, we got a bunch to talk about tonight. We want to talk about the new, here goes my geekness. I'm proud. The new Star Wars trailer that's out. Star Wars: The Force Awakens, Nathan.
Could we talk about Doctor Who?
Yeah, we can talk about your screwdriver. Jesus. It's the wars, man. You can't put Doctor Who in with the wars. I'm just saying, we're going to go over that tonight, guys, and much, much more. Demon Hunter.
Ghost Man.
Shadow Nation.
Woohoo.
Tonight's show.
Da-da-da.
That's how I did it. Tonight's show, not tonight's guest, because you get your Bad Boys of Shadow, guys. What happened in 2014? G&D show year in review. Nathan Scoot over Sean Burris every week for the past 8 years have brought you some of the best names in the sport, is it a sport? Of paranormal research, monsters, legends, and myths. And of course, your favorite actors from all your horror shows. Spooky. We take you each week, guys, down the haunted back roads of America, and we have for 8 years. And tonight, we go inside some of the best shows we've done in 2014. Only here at the Mystifying Oracle of Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
I like to call it the Lear in review myself.
The Lear? Yeah. Well, let's see what happens this year, since I can't get the
now,
scenes to change.
Going to this, just to give you some idea, Sean and I got together and said, let's pick some of our favorite clips. We've been doing this every year for, what, 8 years now, Sean?
8 years, brother.
Sean picks some one-minute clips of his favorite little segments, and then I pick some five-minute clips of episodes where things kind of happened or we learned something that we didn't already know.
It's true. Absolutely.
We'll be going. And as many as we can fit in the next hour or so, we'll be talking about them.
Absolutely, brother. And you know what? I this Christmas is every year, like you said, we've been on the air 8 years, man. When you say it, it's like, holy cow. That's a lot of work you and I have put into this. And
yeah.
I mean, of course, a lot of people might not know what we do. I know a lot of people in Shadow Nation appreciate it. Guys, we love doing it for you. Another year is upon us, and boy, has this been another stellar year. I don't know if it topped last year, but it was closed, right?
Well, we are actually, since we did we get to do a Lear in review last year?
I don't think so.
We did. So actually, there's a few of the clips this evening will actually be from some of our big shows last year as well.
Yeah, I think so. I do, because it was just a bit, you know, guys, we really love doing that for you. And, you know, one thing for Nathan and I mean, I could speak for us both on this one. The G&D show has always been, here, you know, for 8 years. It's always been, it's constantly changing. We've changed and gotten better at what we do, our craft, but it's always been here. We've had some amazing times, turned it into a little stint on television, and it all started from our own little rooms with a little podcast.
Field in Gettysburg with a ghost laughing at me over a pitcher of Yingling beer.
Yingling beer. And then it went on for a couple months. You know, actually, we didn't get right on the air after that.
No, it wasn't until February. It was actually, November that we got together and decided to do the show, and it wasn't until February that we got on the air.
Well, you know, I think a lot of the shows and a lot of the reasons you and I wanted to get in it, because, guys, we know you all have your own lives and you all have things going on, and sometimes good things, sometimes bad, but you can always count on Nathan and I, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter, or Demon Hunter and Ghostman, the way I just said our names. But that's something you can always turn on, the G&D show on Sunday nights, usually, and get a chuckle, hear a good guest, and realize that, you know, it's not that bad. Things go on. You know, that was the G&D show, Nathan, at least, that pulled me through some tough times, too, because, you know, I went through the divorce and all that. When we started, you could say G&D was born of fire.
Yeah. When we started the show, you were sitting on a cardboard box.
I was.
Because your wife took all the furniture.
Yep. I was losing my shirt. Had no idea. Young man had no idea what was going on. Kids, everything, for no reason. And, you know, Nathan and I had started this show, and that was the only thing I was certain of, is that I was going on the air at the time. Everything else was unstable, but the show always...
I seem to remember your parents saying, is this really the right time for you to be just starting a project like this?
Yeah, I guess the G&D show, what I always say about, you know, I love being on the air, and I love being able to comfort people on Sunday nights and make them laugh, and you and I both make them laugh, and you know, get them involved in a lot of history and spooky stories and things that are out there that makes this world great. And I guess our show really did that for me while we were doing it, you know? Have you ever had that? Have you ever had, you know, I'm sure you've had, I know you've had troubles and stuff, and the show kind of pulls you out of that, you know?
I mean, like, we talked recently, we took a couple weeks off because of the holidays. October rolled into the holidays, and you and I were both running around with our jobs, and I was like, I need a show.
Yeah.
Let's do a show. I need a show now.
You get addicted. Even though it's hard work talking to all the agents when it comes to the Hollywood people, or not even Hollywood people, but, you know, it's worth it, guys. And we get to talk to so many amazing people that otherwise we probably never would.
No. I mean, how many people can say, oh, I have, like, the home phone numbers of, like, three of the big stars of The Walking Dead?
We don't call them, but until they're on the show, you know. But
That's like when Elvira was on the show all those years ago, and her agent insisted on we call her, and she would connect us to the call, and it kept falling through, and finally we got off the air, and Elvira just said, call me at this number.
Yeah, just call me at the freaking house. Once they find out we're not
number.
Once they find out we're not weirdos, then they say, "Oh, give us a call." Yeah, I mean, we've had some amazing people on. I'm in shock over some of the legendary actors and people of the paranormal and strange and weird and spooky from all over the world come on. I mean, people that have made impacts, huge impacts on society and the world, and authors, Nathan, that have worked years. Marilyn K. Roach is one of the shows we'll be going over tonight. Woman fascinated me, man.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was one of those things that just blew your mind when you talked to her.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've always tried to do things we're passionate about. We always think of you guys first, but we also get to do, you know, little side secret things we want to do, like Salem. You know, I've never been to Salem. It's here in the United States. I can fly anywhere I want to go, and I just never find the time to get out.
Well, look at me. For how many years now have I been saying I want to do a live show from my favorite haunted location in America?
The theater.
Just Theater Works over in New Milford, Connecticut. It's one town over from me. Mm-hmm. We've never done a live show from there.
Yeah, and we should. You know, I think that's one of the things, guys, talking about this year in review, the year goes so fast.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I mean, we have to, you know, with our show, it's usually chaos, but it's a controlled chaos. And we have, you know, segments that we try to do. Maybe we should apply that to life, everybody.
Yeah.
Segment our life and slow down and go, I want to do this. I'm going to target this for this month, you know?
I hear you, brother. I hear you.
Easier said than done. Easier said than done. So what about this year? What was your favorite thing this year? You know, outside of the show and everything.
Outside of the show?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. What was my favorite thing that I did this year? I bought my new motorcycle.
You did? Yeah. Yeah.
That was a big one for me because I've been driving beat up used motorcycles for years. And finally, you know, Chrissy P, my wife, said, you know, you never spend money on yourself. It's always on the house or me or the show. Or why don't you go out and spend some money on yourself? And I went out and bought myself a new motorcycle. And because I work such crazy hours and it rained almost every weekend,
right,
I got to drive a total of about 3 days on that brand new motorcycle this year.
Well, you got to be promoted to the Masons or whatever, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. That was a big one for me, too. That was a huge one for me that I became a junior officer at the Lodge of Masonry, and in my lodge, I became the junior deacon. So, yeah, that was a big one for me.
Yeah, that was a huge honor. That's really cool.
For those of you who missed last week's show, we had some audio issues uploading it, so I don't know when we'll actually get that show upwards, but you missed out me telling Sean about all the secrets of Masonry. I mean, oh, it was crazy.
Yeah, it was really cool. And tonight, guys, we're not – huh?
I was laughing.
Oh, tonight, Masonry. Tonight, yeah, I was trying to get Nathan to say it was satanic, and he wouldn't do it. So
it's not satanic.
I was throwing all these secret questions at him, seeing if I could throw him out. But he gave the politician's dodge.
I never gave the politician's dodge. I only gave you the answers I was allowed to give you.
Politician's dodge. Anyway, Demon Hunter, you know, we're both in the entertainment field. And I tried to upload a video, guys. We were going to play the trailer. But for you guys that have not seen, for you Star Wars fans, the new trailer's out for Star Wars The Force Awakens 2015. December, it comes out. What do you think, Nathan? Have you seen this?
I saw the trailer. I'm a little excited about the idea of a new Star Wars coming out.
Yeah.
And I'm a little disappointed with the trailer.
Why?
Because... What are the selling points of this new Star Wars, John?
To me?
No, in general. What did they leak early on? The information they leaked early on that got everybody excited that Disney bought Star Wars and there was going to be more Star Wars movies. Because let's face it, something like that, Disney buys it, you're really worried about what Disney's going to do with it. And I'm a Disney fan. But they leaked out the information that the original trio was going to be in the movie.
Right.
Right? We're going to be in the movie. We were going to have Han, Luke, and Leia back in Star Wars.
Right.
You watch the trailer. Do you see any of them?
No, you're not going to see any of them.
Well, you should see them because that's what they leaked out early on so that we'd all be interested.
My God, man. That's why because you're sitting here asking right now, and it's over a year before it premieres. Mission accomplished. Mission accomplished. Mark Hamill will be in it. He's talking all over the line. And you know, I know the old Star Wars characters will be in it because none of them are responding through their agents back to our show. We always...
No, imagine that. None of the Star Wars people responding to us.
Well, they would.
Maybe now that George Lucas doesn't have to deal with it all anymore, maybe he'll come on the show.
Well, you know, Mike Rooker,
he's got more time.
Friend of our show, huge star, Scott Wilson, legendary star, both been on our show. Scott Wilson's been on like 50 movies in his lifetime, and he came on our show. So, you know, we tried Star Wars, and we probably would have got Carrie Fisher or Mark Hamill, something like that. But
before they announced that Disney was buying it?
Right, before. And that's usually how it works, guys. Like with Mikey Rooker, he came on the show, but then when he was working on Guardians of the Galaxy, they probably shot him down, said, don't go back on the guy's show. You know what I mean?
Well, we did interrupt his kata.
That's true. We did. But he'll be back on, I'm sure. But, you know, with the Star Wars trailer, there's some new characters, too. I know a lot of people were talking about the black gentleman that is the stormtrooper. That was a big thing. There was a big debate about, you know, how can, you know, a black guy be a stormtrooper? Because those are clones. You know,
well,
we're all
how did Luke get into a stormtrooper outfit?
Well, absolutely.
There you go. He took somebody else's outfit.
But there was
maybe they're not making clones anymore, and now maybe that's the uniform of the army for the New Republic.
Right, because if you look at it, it's not a stormtrooper outfit.
Yeah.
It's different. Looks more like the guys that rode the speeders in Return of the Jedi.
All had different outfits. You landed on Hoth. They were all wearing sheets over their head. They looked like they joined the KKK.
Yeah. Well, you know, they had the... a lot of people were debating on the chat rooms and stuff about the lightsaber. The Sith... You see the Sith from behind. He's walking through the snowfall in the dark woods, and all of a sudden he pulls out that lightsaber, and it's got the... what do you call it? The guard across the hand?
The hilt?
Yeah, the hilt, and everybody was freaking out, man. They were losing their mind. How is that possible? That hilt would cut your fingers off. And they did a whole thing on it on The Daily Show. Oh, I'm sorry. What's the one with
Colbert?
The Colbert Report. And he broke it all down. He's like, it wouldn't cut through your hand because this piece is here and that. He's a huge Star Wars fan, too. And, you know,
people... he's a huge Star Wars fan and a huge... Hobbit fan, you know, with Hobbit coming out this week, I'm sure he's going to be in the movies this week.
Yeah, the Hobbit's coming out, you know, and that's another thing I'll probably take the kids to see. I never really got into the Hobbit, did you?
Oh yeah, big time.
You did.
I've read the Hobbit, the Lord of the Rings, and the Silmarillion.
Now, was the Hobbit before, as far as books, Hobbit was before the Lord of the Rings?
The Hobbit was written first.
Yeah.
It was basically originally a children's story that J.R.R. Tolkien told to his children, mm-hmm. and then he wrote it all out and sold it as a book.
Right.
And then afterwards, he wrote The Lord of the Rings, which basically, the funny thing a lot of people don't know about that, was at the same time that he wrote that, another series of books was being written, right. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Okay.
And he was sitting down with the people writing that book,
mm-hmm.
or the person writing that book, and discussing different topics regarding like religion and politics,
right.
and all that kind of stuff. And basically, you know, going into the different aspects of, you know, religion, politics, magic, people's basic belief systems, that kind of stuff, and deciding what would be going into the book. And that's why there's similarities between the two books when you're reading them,
mm-hmm.
that you might not normally caught.
Yeah, I knew.
Did I just wander on that? I did. I wandered completely off of that.
Well, that's what you do. Hey, going back to what you said about the trailer, you were expecting to see the older guys in it. They asked Mark about it. So it says, when Mark Hamill was asked, probably by you, if he was surprised by not being put in the Force Awakens teaser, he clarified, not really. Hamill backed that up by saying, how the new film must focus is on the younger cast. This must be our offspring in the current generation, with us there leading the kind of support that Peter Cushing and Alec Guinness did to us in the originals. Its offspring is certainly an interesting choice of words. Could the rumors of the film following Han and Leia are Luke's children to be true? They don't know. That's what they're saying. The speculations are going crazy.
And I'm sorry, I forgot to say C.S. Lewis writing Chronicles of Narnia. But
okay.
In case anybody thinks I didn't know what they were. But
ADD Radio, folks. We go right back and forth. Follow us.
ADD Radio, man. Never know what's going to happen.
No.
Stay
tuned.
But,
stay tuned.
You know, I can see that, too. It's got just because Han and Luke and Leia are going to be in the initial movie, that doesn't mean they're going to be in the whole series, at least not all three of them, right?
Well, I wouldn't think so, because, you know, the Jedis. You had Obi-Wan Kenobi, stuff like that in the first one. Of course, we don't live forever. And for the Star Wars legacy, and that's what's so cool, man. We grew up on Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Then my kids in the last 10 years have grown up on a new Star Wars trilogy. A lot of people liked it. A lot of people didn't. Now, we start where you and I left off. After Return of the Jedi, the last true trilogy while I was a kid, you know?
Now, here's the question I have for you, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I have so many young people who work for me, most of them film students, things like this. they're all discussing the new Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And of course, they're getting into the philosophical side of Star Wars.
Okay.
And they're discussing, you know, Luke bringing, or Anakin bringing balance to the Force.
Right.
And honestly, at the end of the series, Anakin did bring balance to the Force. Before that, there were all these Jedis and two Sith.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the the prequels, there were two Sith, two Jedi. Then, of course, you know, Obi-Wan gets killed, and there's two Sith and one Jedi, but there's also Leia.
Yes.
And then...
unrealized Jedi.
Right. And then Luke kills... actually, Darth Vader kills the Emperor, regains his humanity, and now there's two Jedi, but Vader dies. And now there's one Jedi.
Okay.
So there is no balance to the Force yet.
That's true.
So, I mean, are there more Sith out there? Or is there like a new generation of a new kind of users of the Force that are kind of neither good nor bad, and that brings the balance to the Force, and that's where we come in into the new series.
Right. Well, Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, is coming out, and you guys might have noticed in there, Nathan, that I did notice, on some of the boards, not inside the teaser, they had said that Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, is now the one that must teach. If you remember at the end of the Return of the Jedi, Yoda, when he dies in the swamp, sorry guys, that's a spoiler if you haven't seen Return of the Jedi, it came out in 88, try to catch up, but he says, you know, you're the last of us, with him going. Obi-Wan was gone, Vader, you know, Anakin had turned to Vader, to the dark side, he was a Sith, and, well, actually, Yoda said there's another, but Luke must teach others and bring it back. And in this one, there's high speculation that he will be take over where Obi-Wan Kenobi left off and train a new, and he's going to have to. He's going to have to be.
And remember, there were several comic book series that came out after this. In one comic, Luke starts a new Jedi temple.
Mm-hmm.
And then because he has Vader's dark nature.
Yeah.
He actually gets kicked out of the Jedi and starts the new Sith.
Okay.
In another, he becomes like the head of the Jedi, or actually the only Jedi. But there are more Sith out there that we didn't know about, and they kind of trick people into thinking that Luke is evil.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke becomes kind of like an outcast.
Right.
So, and of course, in another series, Luke actually becomes the trainer, and he becomes like the Jedi Supreme. So it's he kind of like the old Yoda.
Right.
So I mean, there's a whole different bunch of aspects out there that now we get to see how Disney takes Lucas's universe and does something with it.
You know, they bought from Lucas the Star Wars franchise for $4.5 billion.
$4.5 billion, and Lucas gave away most of that to charity.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that. Well, that he really needs.
I think he gave it to like one particular charity.
Well, I know he took a lot of heat, man, with the last three that he did. That people thought, how can you do the CGI? I mean, they did kind of CGI it to death, man. It's still the wars, but you know, all of a sudden you got Jabba the Hutt, this big massive puppet, and you know, he looked real, and he's laying there with, you know, the stuff coming out of his mouth, then all of a sudden he's a tadpole CGI, clearly cartoon looking, crawling across the sand talking to Han Solo. I mean, they really kind of, only Star Wars can bounce back from that.
True that. I mean, I am very lucky that I have the original three Star Wars, you know, New Hope, Empire, and Jedi.
Right.
I have them with none of the original, or all original with none of the new stuff added.
Right.
In high def on DVD. And I love it to death.
Mm-hmm.
But I now that I have that, I don't watch any of the ones that have all the new editings on it. I mean, Anakin Skywalker at the end of the Jedi is supposed to be an old man. Do not put a young young right. Anakin Skywalker in there.
Well, I wonder how they're going to get Chewbacca back, because the actor there, he's ancient. I don't know.
Well, it is a costume, so it's not like he has to grow all that hair out.
Well, Chewie will be gray and a little bit slower. You know, Chewie might have a hearing aid. He might be like,
I said, hand me the electric spanner.
Yeah, the spanner. Well, I don't know. But, you know, like you said before, in the teaser, we did see some stuff. We've seen that the Rebel Alliance clearly is still there, at least in a form, with the showing of Millennium Falcon at the end, which was hardcore. And then you've seen the TIE Fighters fast on its trail, shooting away, which, of course, TIE Fighters were part of the
Empire.
The Empire. And the voice at the beginning, which I guess is the actor who played Caesar in most of the Planet of the Apes, and the guy that does the voices on a lot of Lord of the Rings and stuff. You might know the guy that did the voice of the... Who was the skinny, scrawny guy that goes, my precious?
Gollum?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, that guy is the one at the beginning, they say, the voice. And they think that that might be the Emperor. There's speculation that Vader did not, in fact, kill the Emperor by throwing him down that chute there with all the electric stuff, because you never did see the Emperor. You know, he just kind of exploded into the universe, but you didn't see him explode either. So people think the Emperor might still be alive. And then, of course, they have all this power because you see, you know, hundreds of stormtroopers getting ready to jump
from a ship.
So they think
Andy Serkis is going to be the new Emperor?
They do. Or at least the voice, yeah. As you know,
Maybe he's just a spirit from the other side, the way Obi-Wan is. Because remember, his master knew how to avoid death.
This is true. They even broke it down to the voices, where at the end it says, the dark side. And then he goes, and the light. Like, he really wasn't happy about the light side. So, you know, we'll see what happens, man. I am peeing my pants. I'm ready to go. My geekhood is showing, and I'm proud of it. I want to dress up like a stormtrooper with the boys and get the girls out there.
You know, I am still disappointed in myself this year. I walked into like a thrift store, and there was a full-size Darth Vader costume, one of those $700 costumes on the rack in the thrift store for $200. I went home, got my cash, came back, and somebody else had bought it.
Oh, my God, you don't. Oh, you should have sat there with it and had the wife bring you your wallet.
I guess so. I'm still just so depressed about that.
I don't know, Nathan. Okay, we're at 7:30. What do you say we go into the year?
We start talking about our Lear in review. You want to start, or shall I, brother?
I say you start with it, guys. G&D Show, year in review. There's no music. We're just going to go into it, right? Right? It's been a heck of a year, brother.
Well, where should we start, brother? What should we start with?
I don't know. We got so much from Don Wildman, Jason Haxton, all the stuff that happened with the Dybbuk box. Oh, my God, to you and I, from you getting beat up by a whatever unseen force, from my car being destroyed by lightning in the house, gas mains, and, you know, the filming.
I say we start.
Filming of the new Monsters of America coming out in January. That'd be cool, too.
I say we start with a little UFO information and go back to when Ryan Burns came on the show and told us a little about the inside of the Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh, great show.
Yes.
Let's do that.
When you consider the fact that Russia is trying to annex the moon at this point, do you think this has they're trying to get to it before Bigelow?
You know, I think they're trying to. But the funny thing is they kind of have to go through him. In fact, I believe the majority of their space station technology, they are actually purchasing through Bigelow Aerospace. So at the end of the day, he's got his finger in absolutely everything that has to do with space.
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say, guys, with Bigelow. Mr. Bigelow, he steps out. You got John Alexander, of course, the retired Army colonel that comes forth and basically says, hey, there's paranormal stuff happening at this ranch. I mean, he's on record as saying it. And then most people would say, okay, you got a billionaire. He comes out. He loves to buy property. So he buys this 480-acre lot just because he's a real estate guy, right? So he's buying it up. Here's a little bit more on Bigelow. And I know you already know this, Ryan, but for our listeners, he steps in the 90s. to the FAA Air Traffic Control Organization, and he somehow buys them, but I'm not going to say that on the air. He gets them to direct all UFO reports to Bigelow Aerospace. Now, that's what you do today. You go to the website, and it directs you to the BigelowAerospace.com. He is doing, and it's called BASS. It's a for-profit organization. It's for advanced space studies. Dr. Kelleher, Mark Easter. Did you say Mark was a friend of yours?
Was it? You know, I wouldn't call him a friend, but I definitely we know about each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not only does Bigelow buy this ranch where all this creepy stuff's happening, okay? So you could say, oh, well, he's just a real estate guy buying up land. So check this. Goes to the FAA and says, I want all UFO reports to come to me from now on. So it goes to Bigelow Aerospace. Then, and I believe it was in 1995, he enters into agreement with MUFON, a nonprofit organization, for the public to report UFOs, the Mutual UFO Network. He goes to them, and now Dr. Kelleher, the PhD scientist that basically is in Bigelow's hip pocket, he is the public relations person for the Colorado-based MUFON, man. And they've started, some speculate, they've started the Star Team Impact Project between MUFON and Bigelow. I mean, what do you think, Ryan? What's going on? I mean, what else? It's clear this man's trying to just hone in on all the UFO topics.
Yeah, he's definitely an enigma. He's a dynamic individual that has, like you said, I mean, the MUFON situation, he said, well, I didn't buy MUFON, but he did make $1 million donation prior to getting all of their reports. So
to a nonprofit organization.
Yeah. You know, so regardless of the way that he's doing his thing, he's definitely involved beyond a shadow of a doubt with absolutely everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way around it. Every report in America is going to this man. I mean, why does he care what type of reports are coming in unless he's trying to look out for something? And I know there's some people that have speculated he's building these pods, okay? And this is way out there. He's building these pods as an escape from the planet Earth because he thinks there could possibly be an alien attack. What do you think about that, Ryan?
I think that these pods are very self-sufficient. They would definitely serve a purpose for that. And he's catering to individuals who want to go to space. So, you know, whether it is to escape the planet Earth or just hang out, or he's even gone as far as, you know, wanting to build a casino and have international space gaming. You know, he is a Las Vegas resident and he's very eccentric and, I mean, a pretty cool guy. But at the same time, I mean, he's just got a lock on this, like, no one ever has, more than any country ever has.
Now, of course, there are rumors because Bigelow Aerospace, he's so deep into the UFO technology that somewhere around the line, he got his hands on UFO technology, and that's what he grew his aerospace industry from.
Absolutely. And that is that. If you don't believe in coincidence, that's where, in my opinion, the connection comes in. I mean, here we have a real estate tycoon. He buys a ranch in Utah, and years later, he is the number one man to have to do with anything space-related, including extraterrestrial reports. So that's kind of a big jump. And other than buying Skinwalker Ranch, there's nothing that really fills that gap.
And that's where we learned about the Skinwalker Ranch that night, Sean.
Yeah, guys, that was Ryan, and he's the author of Skinwalker and Beyond, Ryan Burns. And wow, what a powerful show. It was one of our most highest-rated shows. People were going nuts.
It really was.
They're still commenting. What a great interview we did and everything. And one of the hot topics for me and you, we've always been interested.
Well, yeah, and how can you not when you get into the – honestly, Sean, I cut that interview – right where I start asking him about Doctor Who, and I cut it there just for you because I knew you wouldn't want to hear it.
I support Doctor Who because you love him, so of course I do. I support him. But yeah, that was a great show, man. And Ryan, you know, he's probably listening right now. You're still out there running around that ranch. You be careful, buddy, because that was that place is really a weird place, man. Bigelow and
well,
all
it was
that.
So hard to pick a clip for this show. because he hit on so many topics.
Right.
And I really wanted to get the aspect of like how Bigelow went from being, you know, a everyday, you know, property buyer, or the, I guess you'd buy real estate broker, not even broker, real estate mogul. Yeah. In Vegas, to being like the head of aerospace in the world. So that's why I chose that clip. But, you know, you get into the whole aspect of when Ryan goes out there, he's going on Indian land and he has to have every permit under the sun just to step foot, or he could spend days or even weeks in jail.
Right.
Because the Indian reservations are run by Native American federal agents.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's but it also goes into that whole aspect, you know, that when that show happened, Sean, and it's rumored that, you know, Bigelow sends people out to check on anyone who's going to be talking about him. We had promoted the show that it was going to happen. And then literally I was up at my Masonic Lodge and two people from Utah just showed up.
Yeah, to check I remember out the that. Lodge. I remember that.
And from that day on, I have actually kept my GPS turned off in my car unless I needed it.
Yeah, and you said, what was the odds of all that happening, you know? Yeah, what a strange week. That was weird, but we are still here. So they didn't come get us or nothing. Hey, but you know what? We got a lot of requests for the Jason Haxton interview we did. Yeah. You know how strange that was.
Yes, we did.
And you know,
do you want to play a your clip, Sean, or shall I play mine from the Jason Haxton?
Either or, mine has the interference in it. Did yours?
No. You caught the, you know what? Why don't you play yours? We'll discuss what happened and then we'll play mine where we talk about the actual Dibbit Box itself.
That sounds great, guys. If you might, a lot of you have requested this one. A lot of the Shadow Nation, believe it or not, Nathan, are afraid to listen to this episode. They haven't went back in the archives and listened. One guy told me he was afraid that what happened to us would happen to him. So here we go,
well,
Jason.
To be fair, we've had a lot of luck since then. So.
Well, yeah, I guess we've had a little bit, right? But guys, this was the interview with Jason Haxton and talking about the Dybbuk Box, number one most cursed object in America. Here we go.
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you fine, Sean. But again, this is so typical. Whether it be Aaron Wright from Mysterious Universe or Clyde from Ground Zero, nobody has ever given an interview without problems. As much as I always assume, and I almost forewarned you, but it's just so typical.
We're so sorry, Jason. If we could fix the powers, we would. But you know, living with this thing, and you know, I know we'll close on time tonight because possibly, you know, there's powers out there messing with our interview here, and we'd have to definitely get you back on. But, you know, people, what do you believe? And I know people have asked you before, and sometimes you've kind of said different things. What do you feel is around the box? Because I know we did the radiation thing.
Sean, I lost you on that whole thing there.
I was just guessing between a beep, bop, beep, who knows?
Oh, I'm sorry. Jason, can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, I can now.
Okay, brother. I was asking, what do you feel with the box? Do you feel evil demon, spirit, or some kind of natural explanation?
I figure that, I mean, maybe like Raiders of the Lost Ark, that there is something about this piece that does give you connection in such a way, the magic combination of things in it, the energy that's been placed in it, but I do think it has a sense of power, and that is why I have buried it. Now, that doesn't mean destroy it. I mean, I work with museum artifacts, and I'm very careful, but, you know, the wooden box itself is pretty solid. It's in an acacia arc of gold. It's in a gray military case, and all of that is put into the ground because supposedly, from the Jewish perspective, that will draw the energy away from it and depower it. But if you were to dig this thing up 2,000 years from now, it would be in the same condition it went in because it's highly protective, even as it's put into the ground.
Yeah, well, you could tell right there, guys. That's why Nathan and I went on Monsters in America due out in January on Destination America channel. they called us. Because if you guys could tell in that clip, Nathan can't hear me, I can't hear Jason, and during that whole time I'm talking about, you know, Jason, what do you think that's in that box? You speculated before, so you've had different types of answers, and he's going, Nathan can't hear me, he's going, hey, I had to guess between beep, 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 I couldn't hear you now, and then it gets crystal clear.
Yeah.
And it was like that all night.
And it was one of those things where, for folks who aren't familiar with this episode, this is the episode where towards the end you hear me getting very quick with my answers, because my face started feeling like it was on fire. My back felt like it was on fire. And Sean and I'm texting Sean saying, I have to go. I have to end this episode. You know, there's something wrong. And I went in the other room and my face was swelled up. I had welts on my face. I thought I had welts on my back. I went down and asked my wife. I lifted up my shirt and I actually had a fist-sized bruise in the center of my back.
Right.
And then Sean, 2 days later, received a copy of the book about the Dybbuk box from the author, Jason Haxton, the owner of the Dybbuk box. And that night, his car got struck by lightning. His house, the gas line blew up in the studio, the G&D studio. And he had to evacuate his home. So, I mean, all these things happened right around this interview. It's a coincidence? I don't know. I can't explain. I've had times where I've seen people say, oh, I got a scratch on my back. Look at the scratch. And they send me the photo, and I'm like, but I wasn't there. I can't tell you, did you, rub up against something, whatever. I was sitting in a nice, comfy chair, and the next thing I know, I had a huge bruise on my back. So I don't know what to tell you on that
one. And your face.
I have some clips too, Sean, where Jason actually describes getting the box and what it was like having it in his home.
Oh, well, let's hear him.
Okay, let's check that out.
What's it like to be in the same place with this thing?
Well, that's the thing, is my children were fairly young at the time. You know, I'm talking, 13 and 10 years old. And I really had thought, oh, my gosh, it would be like bringing the Ebola virus into your home. I mean, you feel horrible because you've unwittingly done something that could affect them. What I did was really keep them from being ever really aware of it. And I do think there's a sense of protection. If you're ignorant to it even being around in the house, even existing. But one day when there was this strange jasmine smell and I was trying to get it to my illusionist friend, my son walks into the room and I can smell this strange scent that doesn't belong in our historic home, because typically everything just smells kind of old and musty, but not sweet and sugary. And he walks across the room, looks me in the face, and he just says, Dad, you've got the Dybbuk box. Because I did tell them about 6 months earlier about these college kids and this little thing they had. And of course they were like, well, as long as it will never get near us. And I said, oh, no, it will never, never get near us. And he looked at me and said, you've got the Dybbuk box. And I couldn't lie. I said, yeah. But I said, it'll be all right. Don't worry about it. And really try to keep it low-key. But meanwhile, I was suffering bleeding eyes, congestion that I literally was coughing constantly and choking for years on end. I mean, I seriously figured I had, tuberculosis, some horrible disease, breaking out in hives and welts and all the strange things that go with it. I assumed I was poisoned by the box, that maybe someone put, anthrax or some type of arsenic on it, and I had unwittingly brought it in and I was breathing it and touching it. But all tests proved that it was just a wooden box with a little varnish of sugar and nothing that would harm anybody. So that was kind of how it kind of came in my house. And then really a lot of research, learning Hebrew, talking to rabbis, people who do Kabbalah, anybody who could help me figure out what this item was.
Why? What is the purpose of the box originally?
Could you hear that? What is the purpose of it originally?
The thing is, I should have warned you in the beginning, every single interview on the Dybbuk box, no matter how good your equipment is, it gets thwarted.
Well, don't feel bad about that, because you might have the most haunted object in America, but we have the most you know, we have the most cursed studio, so it's a good match. No, Sean,
bad combination.
Go ahead and ask that again, Sean.
Jason, I was just saying, what was the? And I apologize if you've already stated that. What is the purpose of the box? We know the Jewish lady had brought it over to the country from the old country to our country. What is its general use? Why was it created?
Well, and that's what I think was the mystery of my research in my book, which talks about really trying to figure out why would a nice little old lady create such a horrible thing. And I don't think that was the purpose. The purpose was it was a very personal prayer item, an object like an altar that she felt through her religion she could talk to God and she could ask for things. So if you want to think of it as a prayer or a wish box, because prayers are nothing more than wishing. I hope something doesn't happen, or I hope, you know, something does happen, but always wishes, you know, when you're in your prayer, when you want health or you want wealth or you want protection for somebody, you're really kind of wishing for things. And so this is how I think of it, as a wish box, because others have used it and it typically will answer their prayer. But in her case, she wanted to understand the Holocaust. So her wish was, how did this begin? How did my siblings, my parents, my friends, how did our whole community, how did this happen? And that's a pretty big question. Yeah. when you think about it. And so that's why at her death she has to have it buried with her, because there would be no need for this to be answered. However, the family said they realized when they did not bury the box, her wish was still clinging to it, and it was set into motion that box would answer the prayer, which is why the Holocaust.
Yeah. See, hey, Nathan, I tell you what, you know that we've been out looking monsters, demons, everything else. People have warned us. We had the voodoo queen of New Orleans, the direct descendant of Marie Laveau, priestess Miriam, tell us on Extreme Paranormal that, you know, we go out looking for these things. You could be in trouble. Spirits can possess, things like that. But little did I know that after 8 years of paranormal radio, that we get jumped on the air by whatever, you know?
And, you know, folks, for you that didn't hear this episode or afraid to go back to listen to it, go listen to it, because, you know, I can't guarantee your safety, but that's part of the adventure. Anyway, it was one of those things where he talked about this woman wanted to know the truth about the Dybbuk box, and the Dybbuk box wound up with him and in his hometown. And that is where one of the men who wrote one of the initial scientific papers that led to much of Hitler's research started his whole campaign and his whole research. So that's why it came back to him. But it was a wild show, an absolute wild show.
Absolutely. And guys, that took Nathan and I down a weird road this year. Make sure you watch Destination America. Check out in January. You'll see a little bit of us in the Dybbuk box.
You'll see pictures of me and Sean. Sean gets to actually describe what happened. Again, the Dybbuk box played a trick on me and I didn't get to get out there.
Yeah, that's it. We both went through hell and we got a little bit of TV time out of it. So anyway, guys, stay tuned for that. It's supposed to be sometime in January. When it gets closer to date, we'll let you know. Anyway, switching gears, our favorite show.
Our favorite show.
The Walking Dead, guys. Everybody knows, everybody at the Shadow Nation just waits around and watches who our next guest will be, because you guys know we don't like to tell you ahead of time. We like to wait to the last minute and spring it on you.
We are still working on Norman Reedus, for those of you who are listening.
Absolutely. Norman, it's the holidays, guys. Things slow down in Hollywood around the holidays.
Anybody who knows anything about working with people in Hollywood, you can't get in touch with anybody in December.
No.
It's
it's hard enough for us to be on the air, let alone these huge stars. But anyway, from The Walking Dead, Nathan and I love it. Shadow Nation, you love it. And we've had some of the biggest stars, Nathan.
Yes, we have.
Michael Rooker.
Yep.
The legendary Scott Wilson.
Yes, sir.
And a month ago, Tyrese, Chad Coleman.
Chad Coleman. Yep.
Absolutely. But if you remember this, we had Mikey Rooker. He was our first one. He played Merle Dixon in The Walking Dead, I think, until season 3. And he was the guy with the one hand, guys. So if you go back, you don't know who he is. He came on, I think we ended the show like a half hour before his episode of The Walking Dead came on. And yep. A day before his video game releases. Remember that, Nate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was talking to him because the kids really wanted the game. And anyway, Mike was trying to sales pitch me, guys, and I told him he owes me some stuff, owes me some money. So here we go. Check this out, guys.
You've got, what is it, the video game coming out in 2 days.
Survival Instincts,
yeah,
baby.
Survival Instincts. That's a game produced by Activision. And me and Norman Reedus, we get to play ourselves, our roles from The Walking Dead. You know, we get to in game form, and so it's going to be a fun game. I think people are going to enjoy it. It's not going to be Black Ops 2. Okay, I did Black Ops 2. I played
yes.
Mike Harper in Black Ops 2.
Amazing.
And so that's a very high end. That's one of their high end Activision, the pinnacle of gaming. You know,
that's insane.
That damn game made $500 million on the first day mm-hmm. it came out. So,
but see,
very popular.
Mikey, I think you're going to be shocked, bro, by this Walking Dead, because I myself, this is the first time my kid screamed until I went and put a deposit down on the game, which is due to be, guys, for your information, The Walking Dead Survival Instincts with Mikey and Norman Reedus. It's due out Tuesday. You can get it Monday nights at, I know, GameStop, to name a few. At midnight, they're going to have a big release party. You can pick it up there. Mike, you owe me, what is that, $53? Mike, my kids, man, you owe me $53. Yeah. They said, Dad, we got to have it.
You're going to get $53 of love and fun out of that game. Uh-huh. I'm sure you will.
Mike Rooker, man.
And, you know, that actually aired last year. And what Sean didn't mention on that show was that aired like the week that Mike's character on The Walking Dead
spoiler.
Got killed.
Spoiler.
And spoiler alert, folks, if you haven't watched the show in a year. but the funny thing was, I made a joke to Mike as we came on the air saying, Mike, what are people going to think when your character dies tonight or dies this week? And he just paused. We had like a 10-second pause on the show, and all Sean and I are just sitting there looking, going, oh, crap, what did we do? And we picked up the whole show, and sure enough, his character died in the next episode.
We learn as we go, don't we? We had Scott on there, and Scott had mentioned something about the head in the grocery bag. Remember that?
Oh, yes. He was like, I have my head in a grocery bag. Yeah. And that night they cut his head off on the show.
Yeah, that was awesome. But, you know, Nathan, well, I guess it's your turn. We have so many good clips, man. I'm so excited.
No, actually, we've talked about Scott Wilson. Let's listen to Scott Wilson now. You've got Scott Wilson on the
line. Oh, you want to listen to Scotty?
Yes.
Okay, well, we can do Scott Wilson, man. Guys, Scott came on. Legendary actor Scott Wilson. He played Herschel Green on The Walking Dead, and of course, the governor chopped his head off. Here we go.
But a lot of them did say, Scott, that they looked up to you as a father on the set. Matter of fact, when you were on The Talking Dead, you said, it's exactly like being on. I mean, heck, the whole stage was crying when you got. I mean, my wife was tearing up, for God's sakes. I was like, no, not Herschel. So, you know, it's such an emotional, you had such an emotional, like Nathan was saying, kick your butt if you don't do what I'm trying to tell you to do. I'm teaching you father figure on the show. It broke so many hearts. Was it like a family on the show? And if it was, what was it like when the cameras, you know, were off? Did it continue?
Well, yeah, there was and still is, social intercourse with the cast members. You know, some of us play golf, and we meet, we have dinner, we go shoot pool. You know, there's the other night there was a dinner here that several of us were at.
Yeah, and that was Scott talking about the family, the togetherness of The Walking Dead.
And I still say I want to show up on the golf course or the pool hall where the Walking Dead team are all just hanging out.
Yeah, I know very rarely.
Pool with you.
Very rarely do you and I get nervous because we've done this for so long. But I got to tell you, Nate, remember how nervous we were when Scott was coming
we
on?
We were like, oh, God, let this show go perfect. Please let this show go perfect.
And he was so cool, man. Mikey and Scott, they both stayed after and talked to us, man. And we get excited, too, guys. We talk to these guys in Hollywood. We laugh and joke with them. But when you have a legend like Scott Wilson coming on, man, just blew my mind. He's been in everything.
But since we're talking Walking Dead, Sean, why don't we just go back a couple months and I'll play the clip from Chad Coleman where we try and pull some information out of Chad, something that we can use for our promote our show that nobody else has, because we need some inside scoops about the Walking Dead or the performers themselves to promote the G&D show.
Go Big Chad!
Go Big Chad!
You know, we all go all in and we go hard on the job. So when it comes to the times that we get to hang with the fans, you know, we just like to cut loose and have fun with them too. So
I've heard the heat down in Georgia while you're filming is something to be abhorred.
Yeah, the heat feels like it's smacking you in your face. Oof. Like it's literally going, just whipping you around.
Bow, bow. Oh, yeah.
And we keep complaining that this is going to change. And it's like, hello, 20 seconds ago, you just said, damn, it's hot.
Yeah.
and you just keep going, damn, it's hot. And you just don't stop because it's like a heating lamp.
It's humid, too.
Are there PAs running around with ice bags for everybody?
You got it. You got it with Gatorade and water, and then they start giving out those cool down towels.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But you really have to do it because you know, messing around if somebody gets heat exhaustion or, you know, something severe, you don't want that to go down. So
now listen, Chad. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry, man. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, now listen, we've been on the air 8 years. We're the biggest Walking Dead fan show out there that hasn't been put on TV yet. The Nerdist turned into the Talking Dead. But we're the biggest one out there without the sponsorship. Could you give us something that you haven't given anybody else live on our show? Tell us anything that somebody that you ain't going to tell nobody. Come on, Chad, give us something that I can promote, man. Throw me a bone, brother. Throw me a bone.
Oh my God!
Catapult my career,
Chad. Look, man. I can't promote you at my expense. Yeah, I love you, bro. I do.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chad. Next time you're on The Talking Dead, just tell Chris I met these two guys. You got to have them on the show.
I can do that.
All right.
I heard something interesting about that boy's worth like over $20 million.
Yeah.
See, we got in the wrong end of podcasting. He started the Nerdist. We did the wrong.
Yeah.
There you go. So you guys knew about it. I didn't know anything about that. I found out I was in Vegas with another comedian, and he told me that. I was like, okay, didn't know that.
Well, you know, the trick is he knows the secret. He makes sure in his contract it doesn't stop him from doing other jobs. So as soon as he's done with one, he jumps to the next.
Oh, God. He's swinging on the vine.
Chad, people always want to know on The Walking Dead. I know I do. When we're sitting there watching it, and I'm watching you walk down the tracks with Carol. And, you know, that little house in the last season that you guys went into, people want to know details, like was that a pre-existing home and they just shut down that whole area to make it, you know, excluded from everything else? I mean, how do they create that? Was that house already there and they just did that or what?
It was already there. It was a location that we got fantastic location people that go out there and find the most amazing scenes. It's real stuff, you know.
Yeah,
that's just how they do it. They're incredible at their job. So yeah, that was all real, and which makes it even greater, you know, because you just feel like you're right there and, you know, no acting required.
You ever get, I know when we had our TV show, we was going out looking for monsters and ghosts and stuff, and some of the places we went to, you know, when the camera went off, you went to the bathroom or something, sometimes you get a little spooked looking over your shoulder. I was just wondering, when you're out there, like in a scene at night and you're dark and you look over the hill and there's 5,000 walkers coming in a herd, does it ever just kind of give you a chill for a second every once in a while, even though you know it's actors?
Yeah, you know, I pee a little bit. I pee a tiny bit. Just a small little bit comes out sometimes.
Walking Dead, promoted by Depends.
See, Chad Coleman said he peed his pants live on our show, everybody. I can promote that.
Just a tiny bit. Hey, you know, but it is dark out there, boy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
No joke, it's dark out there.
See, we got him. He did give us something to promote after all.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. They have so much fun on our show. See, guys, only with our show do you get the inside scoop on things like that. Most shows ask them, you know, big, important questions about
the
show.
We ask them, do you pee your pants on the set?
Have you ever peed your pants on the set? That was, man, he was, what a great guest.
Oh, yeah.
It took us a year to land Chad, but we got him.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, how do you get these people on the show? And I tell them, it's a full-time job.
It is.
Sean sends a letter, then he contacts them back. And then what, Sean, you say about 20, 30 hours of communication back and forth to try and get somebody on the show.
At least. And we just stay after.
It's work, folks. We do it for you. We do it for you.
And it's paying off. It's paid off within itself. So anything else that comes out of it, guys, is just a bonus. But, you know, Nathan, if you remember right, switching gears, we get a lot of people, authors, that come on this program. And some of them have done such amazing things in the fields that we love, of the horror genre and the paranormal. And one of them, if you remember right, was Victor Zammit, the attorney that wrote A Lawyer Presents the Case for the Afterlife. Remember him?
Yes, of course, yes.
Irrefutable, Objective Evidence for the Afterlife. He wrote that book, and I was reading parts of it, and I said, this guy is... It's pretty amazing. I mean, he took this to skeptics and slapped them in the mouth with it. And we had him on the show, guys, and me and Nathan basically came out and said, well, what about the skeptics that say, you know, it's cheesecloth and all this? Because he was going back to the old school type thing.
Oh, yeah.
These mediums in Australia. He was out of Australia. But, guys, he called us and he had some fun stuff to say. Just listen. Here we go.
Nearly every session... He has, and he comes to the U.S. to give the demonstrations, and virtually every time he comes here, he puts on the red light on, and people can see this ectoplasm coming out from his mouth, right? And this is at the distance of about 2 feet, 3 feet. So it's real. It's happening. I mean, thousands of people have witnessed this. Now, some of the uninformed, lower-level skeptics repeat this cheesecloth bloody nonsense.
Right.
But the informed one, they keep their mouth shut because I told them to put up or shut up. there was this Professor Donald West, I remember, some years ago, who was commenting on the English brilliant medium Helen Duncan, because she was absolutely, she was like the David Thompson, she was absolutely brilliant. But he, because he was a closed-minded skeptic, he said, big bloody revelation. He said, I know what she does with this bloody ectoplasm. She hides it up her rectum. Oh yes. And then he said, when this session is on, she gets it out and to fool everyone that it's ectoplasm. And that this is a real idiot, because what I did with this guy on the net, a public challenge, I said, Professor Donald West, I tell you what we'll do. I give you out of my own money $20,000 if you can demonstrate to us on stage how you put a bloody, you know, 6 feet cheesecloth up your ass and make it sing Hello Dolly, because
that's oh, that was a great show, man.
That was, and you know, it was so funny because we, you and I are Houdini fans, so we watch all this stuff going, you know, what would Houdini do? But we've never looked at it from the point of view of somebody who like is such a firm believer as he is.
Right.
So it was fabulous, fabulous to hear it from his side.
It was. And it struck us so funny because this is an older gentleman and he's done so much. He did so much with the civil rights movements and all that. And, you know, I got to say, Nathan, I'm not big on the whole cheesecloth thing because we've been told, you know, it was fake. Houdini found out a lot of them were using it. But he was funny. When he said, you know, she puts it in a rectum, I just started coming unglued. And then he told the guy he'd give him $20,000 out of his own pocket. So got a lot of money over there.
And brother, we get a lot of laughs on this show, and I love the laughs. Yeah. You and I both live for the laughs.
We do.
But we also hit topics that people don't always know about.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones I was hoping we could play tonight was when we had on our show from the Charleston Pirate Tours, we had Eric Lavender,
yeah,
who told us the real story of Blackbeard.
Oh, yeah, let's hear that.
Okay, let's give that a listen.
The real piracy came here. These guys didn't play roles in a Hollywood movie. They really showed up here. They really did this stuff. The first pirates that came in, of course, were businessmen that we just had dealings with and left. We don't really know who some of these people were. But the ones who gave us trouble were very much on target with these people and know who they are. I mean, one of the ones that showed up first in August of 1717 was Steve Bonnet. Now, he was an interesting character because the man really didn't have any business being a pirate captain.
Oh.
And didn't really have any business being a captain of a ship because he lived on an island, the island of Barbados, on a huge plantation that grew sugar cane. This man had more money than he knew what to do with.
Wow.
He just wanted to be a pirate.
So he was going through a midlife crisis.
Well, some people would say so, and some people would say, yeah, he's going through a midlife crisis. Some people would say that, being a pirate back in those days would be the equivalent of getting a new tattoo and growing a ponytail and buying a Harley Davidson at the age of 60. But I don't have any tattoos, but I do have a ponytail, but I do not have a Harley Davidson. But nonetheless, the real reason that most people think that he did this, and a lot of historians sort of kind of agree on this point, apparently his wife must have been a handful. Because it's basically said he went to pirating to get away from his nagging wife.
Well, every married man listening to this show right now is just nodding his head and getting smacked by his wife.
Saying, I understand.
There you go. Oh, I've had a few of them get kicked in the shin on my, don't get any ideas from this man. But anyway, it is true. It's been documented that that was one of the reasons. Now, here was the thing. The guy's never been a pirate before. He's never even sailed a ship before. He's basically a retired major from the British Army. They had a little militia down there on the island. He was a major. He retired. But he actually paid some men to build him a ship. He didn't steal one. He paid somebody to build him one. He's a rich guy. He paid somebody to build him a new ship. And as I tell people on the tour, it still had that nice new ship smell when he's loading cannons on it. Like a flag, he named his pirate ship Revenge. And then he took off out of Barbados under the cover of darkness in May of 1717. Now, a lot of people also talk about, there's records that indicate that within an hour after he got out of the confines of the harbor there, he was so seasick he couldn't even stand up. But apparently he finally got his sea legs under him and he showed up in the Charlestown Harbor in August of 1717. Now, he grabbed a couple of ships. Now, here was the other thing. Because of the rice business, the rice plantations were exploding around here, and people were making literal fortunes in the rice business. Now, because of that, a lot of people moved here from Barbados to be on rice plantations, to grow rice, because the people were making all this money. So there was tons of people living here who knew who Steve Bonnet obviously was, because Barbados isn't a very big island. So all these people knew who he was. He didn't want to just turn these ships loose after he cleaned them out. And they sail right into town and say, well, our old buddy Steve Bonnet right out there on the pirate ship. Of course, that would not have worked well. So he left with the ships. He took them with him up to the Cape Fear River. Now, you're talking about Myrtle Beach. That's about 50, 60 miles above Myrtle Beach, mm-hmm, near Wilmington, North Carolina. They go in the river. He took everybody off the big ship and put them on the little ship. He kept the bigger ship. Most people agree that he kept it to for all intents and purposes, cannibalize that ship for lumber, for his own ship. And so he put them all on this little ship and turned them loose. Now, he knew it only take them 2 or 3 days to get back down to Charlestown, so he sold all their sails but one. So instead of a couple, 3 days, it took him 4 weeks to get back down here. Well, of course, by then, he was long gone.
Right.
And then he ends up getting attacked by a Spanish battleship, or actually he engaged them first, and only to find out it was a Spanish battleship, which was not a very good choice for him. And the ship was really damaged, but they escaped and make it down to the Bahamas. And when they get to the Bahamas, down to Nassau, and get the ship repaired, that's when he encounters our friend Edward Beard, okay, a.k.a. Blackbeard. And that's where they get connected.
Oh.
And they form an agreement that Blackbeard will sail his ship. He put another man named Richards in charge of his little sloop. And so Blackbeard's putting together a fleet of ships in order to be able to pillage and plunder more effectively, because he's trying to get a bunch of stuff together to take back home with him, which at this point for him is in Carolina.
Yeah. Blackbeard
and Bonnie actually, working together. And one of the things I found, which I had to cut it a little bit before that, was where he tells us how everybody believes Blackbeard's name was Edward Teach, but it was actually Edward Beard because his father's name was Beard.
Right.
And Teach was like I don't know what would you call it when you use a fake name? It's
AKA.
Yeah, AKA. It's he was using it as a kind of like a name to hide under. So it, yeah. But his name was Beard. So Blackbeard's name was Beard.
Right, absolutely. His alias.
Alias, thank you. Was Teach.
And that was a good choice, Nathan, because that was a good show. And doing this show, like you said, we get a lot of laughs. We can go from laughing to serious in 0.2 seconds with this show. That's what's so great about it. And it always keeps you guessing, and it keeps Nathan and I guessing. And with the show each week, Nathan and I get to walk in the shoes sometimes of people that lived long ago through some of these great authors that we've had on. Now, the next one is author Marilyn K. Roach. You remember her, Demon Hunter?
Oh, yes. Indeed.
Author of Six Women of Salem, which I've always been intrigued by this story. I always try to get out to Salem. I figure it's always there. I'll get there next year, and I never do. Good thing I'm still young, kind of. But anyway, we got Marilyn to come on right after she did the Daily Show with Jon Stewart, her interview on there. And she talks in this clip, guys, about Samuel Parrish. And he was the preacher in the small town of Salem. And she talks about how the witch craze started. What do you think, Demon Hunter?
I would love to hear that.
Here we go, guys.
The townspeople, the villagers, some thought that Samuel Parrish should have been the preacher.
Yeah.
And some thought that he shouldn't be. Do you think he coached these girls to do this, or what?
I think at the beginning he was surprised and embarrassed.
Right.
Presumed witches were in his household.
Right.
But he certainly was willing to believe it. And according to, Rebecca Nurse's family, she having hanged by this time, they really blamed him for encouraging this. He didn't apparently discourage, try to calm anybody down. He bought into it. Later, he does apologize a couple of years later when they it's too late.
Yeah, that's
family is concerned.
I'm sorry.
Betty and Abigail are not among the afflicted who testify in court for very long. Betty is there maybe one or two times, and Abigail after a few more, but she's not there throughout the whole of it. So they do drop out of sight.
Right.
But he still believes that the parishioners who are accused are guilty.
Now, Marilyn, you bring up the terms a lot, afflicted and accused.
Oh, yeah.
The difference between those, I mean, who decided? It was he said, she said, it sounds like whoever, first come, first serve. I'm afflicted, and I blame Marilyn for being the one that afflicted me. Was that it?
Well, a number of the people who thought or said they thought they were being bewitched.
right,
actually had convulsions, which was unusual up until then, but it was sort of a trademark of this year's problems. I think it's psychologically catching, but they would actually fall down and writhe, and the descriptions, it sounds like they were, their limbs were twisted, and if somebody tried to, you know, straighten them out, they were afraid they were going to break their leg or something.
Right.
And, you know, it could be faked, or somebody might, if they're afraid enough, sort of frighten themselves into something like that.
Yeah. Marilyn. Oh, my God.
Well, I originally, Sean, this was one of the clips that I had picked, too, remember?
Yeah.
And it was almost the exact same point in the interview. I had picked it, but I had continued on in my clip to the point where you ask her about your ancestor.
Oh, yeah.
And she actually had done the research for you and found out that one of your ancestors had been accused of being a witch.
Martha Sparks. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, folks, it's an interview worth going back and listening to, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, buddy, I wanted to throw this one in there, and I know we have about 12 minutes left before we have to end for the night.
Yeah.
So I'd like to take up a few minutes and just play this one interview, because it was an interview you got for the show, and I was like, who the heck is this? And then when I looked at it and realized it was Bill Moseley, who had been like one of the leads in one of my favorite shows, Repo Man,
yeah,
Repo, the rock opera. I was stunned, and we had a lot of fun with this interview. You ready for that?
I'm ready. Play Billy. Yeah, that was kind of not the golden age, but I caught the end of the golden age of the late night horror host. So it was.
Who did you have?
Sammy Terry. I know you know him from the conventions.
Wow, I know the name. He wasn't my late night horror host, but the name is very familiar.
Well, I remember the first time I met you was at a Horror Hound convention, and I was speaking to you, and Sid Haig was right down from you, and I just got done speaking to Sid Haig, and Sammy Terry. He must have been he recently passed away, Bill, just last year.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah, it was. But what a great man! He did so much in the community. He walked into the room, and I remember everybody in there that was born in the 70s and early 80s stood up and gave this man, just an outstanding applause. Everybody was on their feet, and they were going by and telling him how much they meant and everything. And even you guys were clapping for the old guy. And I remember walking up to him and going, Sammy, you know, how's it feel, man? Everybody's clapping and everything. And he goes, huh? Yeah. He couldn't hear me.
Hear?
But.
What did he say, huh? Was he like. Had he lost his mind by then? Or
no, I think he turned his hearing aid all the way down, for he couldn't hear all that people screaming.
Well, you know, that happens. You know, by the way, I just got some bad news the other day, and that is apparently the mortality rate of the human race is 100%.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
I know, it's bad news.
The darkness is coming. Embrace it.
Two notable exceptions, Jesus and Dracula.
There you go.
So it's 99. Oh,
I don't want to get controversial.
Well, see, everybody I work with is pretty sure that I'm just replaced with a clone every 4 years, and that's how I managed to pull off all my crazy stunts. So, because I should have been dead a long time ago.
Yes, and you know, you did ask a question, and I'm not certainly not dancing around it. Let's see. I grew up in Barrington, Illinois.
Yeah.
I'm the middle of three sons, no sisters, which is probably why I have two daughters, because God does have a sense of humor. My dad was an executive in the tank car business.
Okay.
Mom was a homemaker, but I do have to say that when it came to Halloween, we were a Halloween-friendly family.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of also, I think, when I was born November 11th, which is Armistice Day back then. Now it's Veterans Day. But apparently, according to my mom, I looked at the birth certificate and I was a 40-week baby.
as opposed to 36. And she told me that I was, that my original due date was actually Halloween.
Oh.
And, so and maybe I was due at 38 weeks. But and then, and she told me a story. She said she was waiting for me in the hospital, and that someone had brought her like a little plastic pumpkin filled with candies to kind of celebrate my Halloween arrival, and I never showed up. I remember her telling me that story when I was a kid, and I cried, not so much because it was such a lonely image that I had of her, you know, by herself in a bed in a long empty ward waiting for this little pumpkin of candies, but I was sad too because those were candies I could have eaten.
See?
So I was sad.
Well, your mom wouldn't told
me. But I'm a peace child, you know. I mean, I was originally supposed to be a Halloween child, but it turned out that I'm a peace child.
The it might have just been that she was such a fan of Halloween herself. She was like, you know, if I have this child now, that's going to be it for Halloween for a long time. So,
well, it makes it a lot easier to remember your birthday.
That's true. I have a niece. I never forget her birthday on Halloween. But
my birthday is actually it's 11/11, and I have two daughters, and my younger daughter is born on October 10th, which is 10/10.
Right.
And my older daughter is Cinco de Mayo, or 5/5.
That's a true sign of the apocalypse.
My family, we celebrate double days.
Oh, so basically, I think if I add these numbers up, you get the numbers from Lost. So
yeah.
It's
yeah, probably.
Is this like a Nostradamus code there, Bill?
The
is this like a Nostradamus thing with the family here or what? Are you predicting?
I hope so. But apparently not. I haven't really been able to, you know, people go, oh my God, that's so weird. And then I go, yeah, so weird good? I mean, even weird bad? I mean, you know, you want to, of course, be special and different.
I just liked having Bill on. It was such a treat.
Bill Moseley, what a lot of people don't know is, and I'm not putting him down for his acting because he's or saying anything about him, but Harvard graduate. Remember that?
Well, why would that be putting down, my friend?
No, no.
I'm
not a big Harvard fan, that's all. I'm more of Yale man. Are you kidding me? I couldn't afford to walk into their front yard and smoke a cigarette in the front foyer. But yeah, Bill came.
In the Harvard yard.
He was a nut, man. When Bill came on, we'll have to get him back on. Every time he comes on, I hear that voice. I see him in House of a Thousand Corpses. Run, rabbit, run! You know, he was such a good guy. Nut job, crazy man. Remember, he would go off topic and just go all the way around the block and back, man.
Oh man, he made ADD broadcasting reach its level. It was wonderful.
He was one of the few guests that stayed with us in discussion.
Yeah. Hey, brother, we've got like 5 minutes left. What do you have for us to wrap up this evening? A guest.
Yeah.
That okay. Like kind of like was the epitome of our year.
Yeah. Nathan, you sealed this one up. Don Wildman from Mysteries at the Museum. We locked him up. A lot of people want Don back. Huge show. I think we got like 9,000, 10,000 downloads on it.
That was on YouTube. Yeah, I mean, I can't even go into what we got on iTunes.
Real life Indiana Jones treat for Nathan and I for 2014. Don Wildman, he talks about Ron, the witch doctor, and some of their experiences. Here we go.
There was this amazing cave system outside of London. There's a lot of chalk under London, you know, southern England. And I went in there with this guy who was an expert in witchcraft. His name was Ralph.
Okay.
And a very, very smart man. And I really, this turned me around a lot. We were looking for witchcraft symbols, which were true and validated to be in there because in those days, of course, this is almost like Druid stuff. It was Christian times.
But I like that, Don. Using Ralph the witch doctor. Ralph the witch doctor.
Exactly. But you know, in England, they probably use the word Rafe.
Right,
you know,
Rafe.
It's not Ralph like we know. But anyway, we climbed all day to get to this particular depth of the cave and found indeed these evil eyes and, you know, these symbols that were meant to call the spirits to protect them. It was all a good witch kind of thing, good witchcraft.
Right.
But in the course of the thing, he told me that he had done a lot of exorcisms and also what do you call it when you chase a ghost away? You know, like he would go to places in order to, I guess that's exorcisms, right?
Yeah, exorcisms.
And
banishment.
I said, okay, Ralph, and this was after we shot all day, so we had a big connection, him and me. And he had my utter respect. I said, I want to know once and for all, is it true? Have you seen things that I haven't seen that tell you that it's true? Because if you say it is, then I believe you. And he looked at me dead in the eye and said, it's true. And I said, damn, what is it? What did you see? He said, I've seen a teddy bear walk across the floor. I've seen a table move on its own. And I've seen a knife move across the table.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, man, that is amazing. And again, I have to give it up to him because I really bought into this whole thing. It was just not into hoaxing me. It wasn't that kind of thing. So these have been experiences I've had in the most unlikely places that have really straightened me up. Like, ooh, there's something I don't understand.
Amazing interview.
Fabulous. And I remember people want us to bring him back on, and they just want us to say, welcome, Don. Now just tell us your whole story, and we're going to be quiet.
Yeah, we had some people, because there's so many, 10,000 people, they're saying, you guys should let him talk more and everything else. I remember that, so whatever.
We get 30 minutes and we have to fit in every question we can think of, people.
Yeah. I remember before the show, Nathan, I said, let's do a quick 1 hour and give them a little treat and get off. It's right at 8:28.
Yeah. And, it's time. It's that time, brother.
Yeah. My, how time flies, guys. Hey, it's been one heck of a 2014, and hopefully Nathan and I will be here for another 8 years bringing you guys all kinds of late night entertainment from the haunted backroads. What do you say, brother? We pay some bills.
I say everybody writes their local radio station and tells them we want the Ghostman and Damon Hunter show on the radio locally so that Sean and I can start making money doing this rather than paying to do it.
Yeah, that's it, guys. Hey, let's pay the bills.
I'm all for you, brother.
All right, let's do it. Hey, guys. Special thanks to all our sponsors. 102.7 FM, The Hog, Stitcher Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey! Are you listening? They want to know, so check them out at actionaudioapps.net. From the haunted backroads of America, this has been the best of your G&D show 2014. Don't go changing America, because you know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Good night, guys.